don't want to encourage piracy.
What they should go after is the pirates, I guess.
Fuck the SEC. Don't get mad because I say it. Don't get mad if they play it. Turn the radio if you don't like it.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio. Arg, arg, arg.
Come on now. Let me feel it now.
Does anyone around here still have a radio?
I am a pirate. I should be arrested, jailed, or fined.
It's Sunday, April 16th, 2006.
Almost live from the Fuking Ionosphere, it's the Pirates Week with Ragnar Danisjold.
Well, I am Ragnar Danisjold, and this is the Pirates Week, a podcast serving the shortwave pirate community. We take a look into the past week's pirate radio activity, what's going on over at the Free Radio Network, an odd tech tip or two, general free radio and DXing news, the propagation forecast, throwing a little pod-safe music in the background, and we call it the Pirates Week. And a little bit later, we're going to get into the interview with Dave Rabbit of Radio First Term. We're going to put that at the end of the show. Going to rapidly go through the usual stuff, the pirates in the news, what's going on over at the FRN, the propagation forecast. The Pirate DXer stops by with his off-air logs, and we will get through all that stuff. I start off every show with the same spiel, more or less. Had a couple people ask me, well, what's pod-safe music? And that is the music in the background. It is pod safe. That means it is not part of the RIAA system. It is music that artists put together and put on a website started by Adam Curry called the Pod Safe Music Network. And it is free to download and free to use. There are no rights issues with it. It's pod safe. And this being a podcast, it's safe to put on the podcast, thus pod safe. And that's why I always put links to the artists in the show notes if you want to go and search it out yourself. If you like the tune in the background, feel free to download it, and it's yours. Well, it is Easter Sunday. Actually, it is Easter afternoon. I usually do these shows in the mornings over a cup of coffee. So I used to do them on a Tuesday afternoon, or actually Tuesday evening. And stopped doing that last year, early last year, because if you listen, go back and listen to the first, 10 or 15 shows, and I would end up, you know, having it doing the shows over two or three glasses of bourbon, and by the end it was pretty rancid, let's just say. So I am not used to doing them in the afternoon, at least not sober. I had to stop that. But doing this one, I've just been on vacation for the last 5 days or so, got completely away from the computer, completely away from radio for the most part, and just kind of decompressed. Actually, I did hear one radio thing coming back early this morning. God, it must have been like 7:30 in the morning. I had my little handheld portable stuck out the window doing about 80 miles an hour going down I-75 coming home, and I picked up WBNY. So there is a reception report for you there, Commander. 80 miles an hour on I-75 with a portable whip stuck out the window. I could catch WBNY just for a few minutes. Definitely heard the commander with his Easter morning, and it was early morning. It must have been like 7:30 this morning, Eastern time. So there's your QSL report, Commander Bunny. So let's get right into it. Let's get into pirates in the news. Okay, we have two pirates in the news this week. The first comes from This Week in Amateur Radio, a Vermont FM pirate has been shut down by the FCC. Let's listen to This Week in Amateur Radio.
A Vermont pirate radio station has been forced to walk the plank. Radio Free Brattleboro, a 10-watt unlicensed community station that broadcasts at 107.9 FM, has lost its three-year court battle against the FCC. Federal Court Judge J. Garvin Murtha has ruled in favor of the FCC and ordered the now-defunct community radio station to never resume broadcasting without a federal license, according to the Rutland Herald. The legal battle began when the FCC forced the station off the air in June 2003 after receiving complaints that its broadcasts interfered with a Massachusetts-based public radio station. Instead of appealing to the FCC, which they believe favors large corporations at the expense of local radio, members of the station turned to the community. They received resolutions of support from a town meeting and the local city council before resuming broadcasts. After the station returned to the airwaves, U.S. Marshals raided its studios in June 2005, seizing $15,000 worth of broadcast equipment. Despite its loss in court, attorney James Maxwell said the station was the first unlicensed radio entity to seek and obtain a town-wide resolution in support of its continuing to broadcast. That and other techniques used could be replicated in other communities, he told the paper. The basic argument that a town gave an entity permission to broadcast still exists, Maxwell said. That argument is still usable by other stations.
Well, the second news story I have is just a real quick blurb from the Jerusalem Post in Israel. Apparently, the police arrested a 21-year-old resident of B'nai Brak Sunday morning on suspicion that he operated a pirate radio station. On Friday evening, police received complaints that a pirate radio broadcast was interfering with plane landings at a nearby airport. Communications Ministry officials conducted a joint raid with police on an apartment used for broadcasting and confiscated radio equipment. The suspect was brought before the Tel Aviv Civil Court and was released on bail. That is, of course, a pirate radio operator in Israel.
Now here's something we hope you'll really like.
Well, it's time now to take a look at what's going on over at the Free Radio Network. That's, of course, at www.frn.net/minds. Starting off on the Grapevine shortwave, the librarian posts continue, up to 40 replies as of now. She is an ex-NPR show host and is researching her PhD on pirate radio. After a bit of a rough start with the FRN gang, she seems to be a tough old bird and is hanging in there, holding her own. She's looking for old stories, more than 20 years old now, of broadcasters and listeners concerning their involvement with pirate radio. A couple good Easter humor links were posted this week. Phantom gave us good chocolate bunny pics, while Cracker linked to a really funny video of a really pissed off Easter bunny. You should take a look at that one if you got broadband. That's really, really good. Over on the workshop forum, Doctor Who received several replies from last week's question of the sudden death of a crystal. James Brown Yard said he had a 243 crystal with dirty film on the rock, and after he cleaned it, it worked fine. WNKR says too much current will cause a fracture in the crystalline structure, and 807B had a really explanative post concerning current-caused fractures and stuff on the crystals. That's the post of the week. Take a look at that, and it'll really let you know why crystals die. Continuing on with the workshop, Cracker is looking for a favor for a friend. He needs info on a 1950s era Viking II. He's looking for input from someone who has set the adjustments and went on the air. Also, what recommended audio modifications should be done and which would be the easiest. JTA says JB is your man. There is some bypass caps to remove and some others to change out in the audio section. And you'll want to eliminate the first mic amp stage to use a line input. As always, I have no affiliation with the FRN other than just a regular reader.
Breaking the law, breaking the law, breaking the law, breaking the law.
I heard you coming on a pirate transmission, coming in through my head, station to station. You're coming in waves, stuttering and broken, and talking about revolution.
Hi everybody, I'm the Pirate DXer. Well, I only have three audio clips for you this week. First of all, we'll get into progressive music radio. I heard April 3rd, 6925 in the upper mode at 2307 UTC.
Broadcasting in the 41-meter pirate band with about 25 watts and a brand new transmitter.
Next, we have Undercover Radio, heard April 16th, 6925 in the upper mode at 1510 UTC with the 20th anniversary show.
Warning, warning. The following program is unsuitable for pro-censorship audiences. If you're pro-censorship, turn that dial now before it's too late. You're listening to Undercover Radio. Broadcasting from our hidden studios in the middle of nowhere.
I only recall sending out one or two QSLs back in those days, but I still had a blast broadcasting. That is, until I was chased by the FCC, which led me to early retirement. But I guess the passage of time and the itch to broadcast brought me back in. And so Undercover Radio was reborn in 2003.
And finally, we're going to close out with KRMI with the Easter program, heard April 16th, 6925 at 1400 UTC.
Is KRMI Radio Michigan International.
Enough with the intro shit. Let's get straight to it.
Well, that's it for me this week. Hopefully I'll have a little more for you. So, for the Pirates Week, I'm the Pirate DXer 73, everybody. Bye-bye.
The Pirates Week Podcast, your home for shortwave pirate information. PiratesWeek.info. That's PiratesWeek.info.
Does anyone around here still have a radio?
Okay, we're not going to do other radio news this week, so let's just go right into the propagation forecast from This Week in Amateur Radio.
This week's propagation forecast tells us that average daily sunspot numbers for the week were up over 12 points to 70.7. What really happened was that for the 7 days of March 30 through April 5th, the daily sunspot number at the start of the period was 35, and it rose to 88 by the seventh day. The next day, April 6th, was the first day of the reporting period for this bulletin, and on that day, the sunspot number rose to 105. The next day, it had dropped way down to 65, then 57, then 46 last Sunday, and by this past Wednesday, April 12th, it had risen again to 79. Geomagnetic disturbances accompanied the rising solar activity. A solar wind stream from a coronal hole met the interplanetary magnetic field, which was pointing south, and this leaves the Earth vulnerable. On April 9th, the mid-latitude A-index was 27, and the K-index rose to 4 and 5. The planetary A-index was 39, with the planetary K-index reaching 5 and 6. Sunspot numbers may rise again later in the month, perhaps over 100 again. This is most likely to occur around April 24th through May 5th.
Okay, now what you've all been waiting for, the interview with Dave Rabbit. Dave Rabbit, of course, ran Radio First Termer, the Big 69, in 1971, operating out of a whorehouse in downtown Saigon during the Vietnam War. His material has been aired on the pirate shortwave bands now, off and on, at least as far as I know, for the last 3 years. Let me just add that the website of the week this week will be the homepage for Dave Rabbit, the Radio First Termer, the Big FM 69, and that is founded by Will Snyder. Will is also the publicist for Dave Rabbit. Take a look at it. The link, of course, will be on the website. It's got a kind of an odd URL, so I'm not going to even try to put it out there for you, but it will be linked on the website. The website, of course, is www.piratesweek.info. So let's get right into the interview that I did with Dave Rabbit last week, and we'll put the first half of it this week, and the second half, actually a little bit more than half, will be aired next week. So let's get right into it. Okay, today we're talking with Dave Rabbit of Radio First Termer. That was a famous pirate radio station that was active during the Vietnam War. Thank you for coming to the podcast here at the Pirates Week, Dave.
Oh, you're very welcome. Glad to be here.
Okay, I have to say, I first heard of Radio First Termer that somebody put a broadcast out of your material on the shortwave band 6925 back in 2004, and I believe it was a recording off of one of your old shows. Ever since then, there has been a buzz in the shortwave pirate community about who you were and where those original broadcasts came from. That kind of started a bit of a scavenger hunt of trying to find, at least in our community, who you were and the work you did back then. And that has been really, really fortunate that you would come forward as you have to the program. That's great.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, it's been kind of a weird road that got us to this conversation.
Okay, so when were your original broadcasts?
The show actually aired for 21 days from January 1st, 1971 to January 21st, 1971. So basically 21 days was the entire broadcast.
And you were active military at the time?
Yeah, correct. Yeah, I was what they call a buck sergeant, three striper in the Air Force.
And you had a bit of an unusual studio at the time. Where were you broadcasting from?
We were broadcasting from Saigon Whorehouse that we set up as a studio because we couldn't broadcast, obviously, from the Air Force Base. That would be a little bit obvious.
So did you actually have a transmitter at the Whorehouse, or were you using the American Forces Vietnam Network relay system, weren't you?
Yeah, the guys that I had met when we were at Phan Rang, they really were the geniuses to this whole operation. And basically, and of course, I'm not a technical person by nature, just kind of a voice, if you will. When we found our location in the Whorehouse in Saigon, we set our room up. The guys from Phan Rang contacted the guys in the Saigon relay area, and they came and they wired us. They went to the rooftop of the Whorehouse that we were at, and they did a dish or whatever to boost the signal to where it went to the local Saigon relay station, and then from there it just piggybacked and went throughout Southeast Asia on through the other relay stations.
So your signal was really pretty much covering all of Vietnam and into Cambodia and Laos, I suppose.
Yes, yeah. In fact, it's really funny because we had some emails at Will Snyder, who is my agent now. In my opinion, the person that really started the internet phenomenon, the Radio First Termer, and he has emails that date back 11 or 12 years, and there's some emails in there from people that were in Cambodia and in Laos that heard the show. So we know we went over into those areas also.
Well, you gave a really nice interview to Corey Dietz on About.com that explained a lot of the background. You previously in that interview stated that most of your equipment came from the Midnight Supply Company. You just kind of piecemealed it together, correct?
Yeah, but, you know, don't misunderstand. Some of the speculation was, well, you know, the show was awfully good for, you know, throwing together equipment. But, you know, we had, like, top-of-the-line Akai reel-to-reel decks. I mean, we had top-of-the-line stuff. It was, like, brand new from, like, the base exchange supply. It wasn't like the regular Air Force supply, but because I was in supply and had supply contacts, you know, it was very easy to get the top-of-the-line equipment, you know, for that particular era.
Now, how long did that take you to put all the equipment together and get your room in the whorehouse? And might I add that broadcasting from a whorehouse in the middle of the Vietnam War, that goes beyond poetic.
Yeah, nothing like getting screwed by the military one way or the other. Yeah, you know, what's really funny is initially we knew we couldn't record and do the show and do all the stuff that we needed to do on the base. There was just no way. Pete had contacts, I'm sure, because of his numerous trips there with a madam. Once we found the, we were like on the sixth or seventh floor. It's like an eight-story hotel slash whorehouse. And once we found the room that we needed, I mean, you know, we were right next door to other rooms that were being either rented out or being used for whorehouse activities. And we couldn't afford to be in there doing a show and all this, oh, Ralph, or something like that, you know, going on. So we acquired through Midnight Supply some cork tiles, like 12 by 12 cork tiles. Put them all over the walls, including the door. Also got an endless supply of mattresses and put those up against the wall and had them all tied together and stuff. And we did some sound tests, and once we were sure that, you know, we couldn't be heard, you know, we were good to go, basically.
You just mentioned that you had some really good reel-to-reel tapes. Now, were most of your material all on tape, or did you do mostly live?
The live stuff that we did was like the latrine wall sayings. Almost, you know, 99.9% of that was live. The music was all taped. We had pre-taped all the music on the reels. We had pre-taped almost 30 days worth of Captain Pansy's weather report and just some different commercials, funny stuff that we did. And then as we'd read things in Stars and Stripes or hear things, comments made that was on AFVN, if there was something in particular we wanted to respond to, then we either recorded it that day before we went on air or we did it live. And a lot of times when we did it live, you know, we were really flying by the seat of our pants because we just had no safety net when we did the show.
How long were the broadcasts? You know, how long were you on air at any one time?
Okay, our broadcasts were 3 hours. We would start at 8 o'clock at night, cut off at 11 o'clock at night, so it was a 3 hour gig, and we did that for 21 days straight.
So it was every night straight.
Yeah, every night from the 1st to the 21st, 8 to 11 every night.
Now, you didn't come into the radio thing cold. You had some previous radio experience?
Only limited. When I was at Phan Rang, which was a year prior to when I arrived at Tonsonute Saigon, my roommate at the time was in the broadcast group, and that's about the time that the AFVN made the decision that they wanted to have the individual air bases start their own radio programs to where it was more localized for like 3 hours at a stretch. And that's really where the three-hour concept came in, because at Phan Rang, we did the same basic thing, of course, legitimately, and it was FM also, and it was like from 8 to 11. And so that's how that three-hour scenario came in when we got to Radio First Hermer and decided to do that in Saigon, was based as kind of an offshoot of the things I had learned as studio engineer for Radio Phan Rang.
So after the 21-day run, what prompted you to go off air?
There was a lot of people gradually that knew about us. There was a huge underground movement going on at the time, and there was a pretty significant anti-war mentality among both officer and enlisted men. And people that enjoyed the show, enjoyed the things that we were saying, the comedy aspect of the thing. It was nothing like AFVN was doing. AFVN had occasionally come up with some funny stuff, but it was pretty much very censored, very militaristic concept, and, you know, they were very restricted on what they would say. So there was a lot of people that really wanted us to be heard, and, you know, the ones that really were protecting us were people that were supposed to be looking for us. And on the 21st, a guy came up to me that was with security police, and one of the people that was responsible for trying to find us at the time, and just said, "You guys need to stop, because the pressure's become so intense that they're, you know, that some of us are going to get in trouble because they're finding it hard to believe that we can't find you guys." So we said, "Okay, that's it." And so that night, Pete Nugent and I told him when we arrived at the studio that we had to stop. So we finished that show, and at the end of the show, I just said, you know, good night, Vietnam, and good luck. And that was it. We cut off and gave the equipment to the madam as part of our rents. Well, we walked out that door in the back, in the alley, and went back to the base. Nothing was ever said about it again as far as the three of us went. From that point on, we walked away and said, you know, it was a good run, and that was the end of it.
You know, I know quite a few pirates that would really like to get the heads up from the authorities before they actually got busted, so you were very fortunate there. How long did you stay in country after you went off air? There's been a lot of speculation on that.
Initially, I was supposed to get out on my birthday, which is August 15th. I went in on my birthday, and I was supposed to get out on my birthday, but the Air Force had a deal where if you wanted to go back to school, they give you an opportunity to have what they called an early out. So I was pretty much bored with the military by then. I was bored with the military long before then, but I was really bored with the military, you know, after, you know, we didn't have a show anymore, and, I mean, you know, I was just doing my normal Air Force job, and I was anxious to get home and get on with my life, and I took the opportunity, and I got out in May of 71 as opposed to August.
When you did come home, did you do any radio-related stuff? You didn't go into radio at all?
Although I really wanted to get into broadcasting, it was really a dream of mine. It's something I really just enjoyed doing. It was something that, you know, just really put my blood on boil. But because of family obligations and my dad in ill health, and, you know, so, you know, it really was a decision that was made for me. It wasn't that I didn't want not to continue in broadcasting. It's just that, you know, the circumstances were that, you know, that was not the hand that was dealt to me.
Okay, let's fast forward 30 years now. Well, when did you realize people still remembered the Radio First Termer broadcasts? Okay, we're going to have to leave the interview there. Tune in next week for the second and somewhat larger part of the interview of what's going on with Dave Rabbit these days and what he's got up his sleeve. He's got a lot of interesting stuff coming up as he rejoins his radio past. So until next time, I'll leave you with some old Dave Rabbit Radio First Termer material that originally aired in 1971 as he signed off one of his pirate broadcasts. Till next time, gang. Thanks for listening.
Well, unfortunately, troops, it's that time again for good old Pete and myself. We've just about reached the ending of another Radio First Termer for tonight. And we'd like to leave you with a few closing thoughts. First off, remember, there is no black power or white power in Vietnam. There's only one power, and that's rabbit power. Another thought, when you go downtown, be sure to take enough rubbers along in case you want to go for two or three or four or five or six or seven like Pete does. Well, Pete, I've enjoyed it. It's been another fantastic night of cutting the Air Force to pieces and saying nasty things on the air. And hopefully, if we're not thrown in jail by tomorrow night, we'll be able to come back again at 8 o'clock and blow your mind with more hard acid music. So, on behalf of myself, and for good old Pete, we'd like to say goodnight to each other. Pete, let's say goodnight to each other. Good night, Pete.
Good night, Dave.
Sounds professional, doesn't it? Huh? Be tuning in again tomorrow night. Please, don't whack off. Listen to Radio First Termer instead. It's more filling. Okay, Pete. We haven't practiced this, folks. This is our new ending.
From the Boat Anchor Soft Glow to your MP3 player via the World Wide Web, we meld the oldest and the newest audio technology. Welcome to the Pirates Week. Piratesweek.tripod.com. Break it along.
You are without doubt the worst pirate I've ever heard of.
But you have heard of